The Blaze Radio Network. On demand. Glenn
Beck. So yesterday, some men clad in hazmat suits marched through Donald Jr. and Vanessa Trump's Manhattan apartment yesterday. They had to initiate decontamination procedures while Vanessa was taken to the hospital because earlier in the day, she received a curious letter in the mail. She opened it and white powder spilled out. Does anybody remember this? Is there anybody remember after 9/11 when they started, they said that there was an anthrax scare and people were sending this to Congress and they were sending this to the White House? Do you remember what we used to think? Please don't let it be an American that did that. Then the Obamas got in and they were saying that, you know, the right was so dangerous. And every time there was something like this, please don't let this be somebody who has any connection at all to the Tea Party. And it never did, never was. Yesterday, I didn't sense anybody saying that to themselves. Oh, please don't let it be. Vanessa instantly felt nauseous and started coughing uncontrollably. Thankfully, the powder was found to be not hazardous. Vanessa and the other two people who were in the house are doing fine. I think if I opened up white powder in my house and I knew what was going on and what that could be, I think I would have been a little nauseous myself. But this isn't the first time an insidious letter containing white powder has been sent to the Trumps. In 2016, police investigated a similar letter sent to Eric Trump, and two letters containing the powder were sent to Trump Tower. Can you imagine? Who could possibly be doing that? And who would condone fear tactics like this? Well, we have our answer. Many on Twitter, including the Socialist Party. They tweeted from their official Socialist Party Twitter account, quote, disgusting people attract disgusting behavior, end quote. Now I could pretend I'm surprised, but socialists have always condoned violence and underhanded deeds. Look it up. It's all throughout history. So whether you hate them or you love them, does the Trump family deserve this kind of a threat? If you're saying, well, may I just ask that you don't lose sight of humanity? That we don't hate people just because they have a different perspective, or even if you think that they're haters themselves, why hate them and become what you claim they are? Are there any things that we can stand united on? If we can't stand united against the sentiments of the Socialist Party and say, I don't care what you did. I don't care what happened. No one deserves this. Everyone is worthy of respect. Well, then we might as well just go and join the Socialist Party, because this is something that socialists have never understood.
It's Tuesday, February 13th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Yesterday, we started a new program on television where we get all of the hosts from the Blaze, and we gather around a roundtable, and we just go through the news of the day. What was the biggest story of the day and why? And most of us agreed last night that the big story was the way the media was treating Kim Jong-un's sister and how she was just, she won smile diplomacy. Even though that's what the Japanese had warned the media, don't fall for, quote, smile diplomacy. They all went, you know, with both feet. They were all in. Can we remind you who she is, who her family is, and what North Korea is? We decided to have somebody on that's been on before who knows it firsthand.
Yeah, Michael Malice, who wrote the book Dear Reader, the unauthorized autobiography of Kim Jong-il, which is excellent, also spent time in North Korea and knows this regime and the whole family inside and out. Michael joins us now. Michael, people know that North Korea is bad. They know bad things happen there. They're kind of just becoming familiar with Kim Jong-un's sister. Can you explain who she is and what she's done?
Sure. The thing about the North Korean Kim family is even internally, they're very mysterious. It's not like, you know, here where I can look at the State Department's website and figure out who the undersecretary is for something and look at the Wikipedia page. Information in North Korea about the main family is tightly controlled to the point where you don't even discuss it in polite company. And let me give you an example. When I was in North Korea, we visited the grave of Kim Jong-un's grandmother, who was always referred to as anti-Japanese heroine Kim Jong-suk. And I asked my guide, I said, oh, did she have any other kids other than Kim Jong-il, which you would think is a benign question. And she paused and looked at me, and it was the kind of thing where she had to answer, but it was like she didn't want to talk about it. As if I, you know, if I ask somebody, hey, have you ever had a drug problem? It's like, what do I do? And she just paused and she goes, yes. And I'm like, okay, I'm sorry. I didn't mean any disrespect. Because in North Korea, the worst thing you can do is to talk about the Kim family. So you just repeat what you're told. So it wasn't discussed in the media that Kim Jong-il had a wife and had children, because that's something that human beings do. In North Korea, the family is regarded as almost supernatural. So she's a very recent figure to step out into the North Korean regime. Women are not in powerful positions there, but her job is to be in charge of the propaganda and agitation department. Now, this was the job Kim Jong-il had before he took over as leader. This is the job that Kim Jong-il used to build this personality cult around his father, the founder of North Korea, the great leader Kim Il-sung. So it's her role to make sure that everyone in North Korea is brainwashed from the time they're born to the time they meet an unfortunately early grave. And in North Korea, all art by law has to have a propagandistic purpose, and its meaning has to be clear. So not only does it have to be explicitly political, it has to be political and beat you over the head with it. And there's a story that illustrates this, which I, in my research, and I have it in my book, where as a kid, Kim Jong-il denounces the Mona Lisa. And I asked my mom, who grew up under the Soviet Union, I go, hey, why does Kim Jong-il hate the Mona Lisa? And she goes, because she's got that Mona Lisa smile. It's ambiguous.
It's not clear.
Right? So real art, according to North Koreans, can't be ambiguous. It has to be clear. It has to have a political message. And that message is, we all think the thoughts of the leader, so, by law.
So, Michael, help me out on this, because I found it so despicable on how our media covered not only her, but the cheerleaders. Oh, they were fantastic. They were all in unison. Nobody pointed out that 21 of those cheerleaders went to prison and are still in prison from the last time they performed outside of their country.
Well, and they're also not pointing out that everyone from North Korea who's allowed to leave the country, even temporarily, their family is held as hostages. So if you get any ideas, your family is going to pay the price.
That's
so
are they literally taken while the family while
yes. Not literally there, but there's an eye kept on them. So if you do anything wrong, they're going to be vanished. And this is actually a big problem for people who want to escape North Korea, because if you escape, your family who's left back home, what they have to start doing now is they bribe government officials to get death certificates. So they pretend, oh, my daughter didn't escape to China. My daughter died early so that, you know, we won't be punished.
Well, the guy who was that held up the crutches in the State of the Union, his father, because he escaped and his sister escaped.
Right.
And his father was tortured to death because of their escape.
Oh, yes. Yes. And it's here's the thing. I was emailing your producers yesterday at the same time you guys were saying, let's get Michael on the show, because I'm like, I knew that you and your audience would want to hear about this, because it was so shocking to me. You know, when I started writing my book and doing work with North Korea, so much of the media attention was on what a spectacle they are, what a sideshow they are. And I'm like, I'm going to do something about this, because this isn't really funny. What you're watching is, you know, Glenn, if someone put a gun to your head, you're going to dance. You're going to be a cheerleader. You know what I mean? Whatever it takes, just don't hurt me and my family. You know what I mean? And people weren't noticing that. So I wrote Dear Reader and I did a lot of press, and the media attention started focusing from, okay, how wacky they are, to this is barbaric. You know, there's an organization called Reporters Without Borders. North Korea is the worst place on earth in terms of press freedom. So you would think that journalists, you know, having some kind of collegial responsibility would be pointing that out. So to see what happened on Saturday when they're talking about her, you know, like she's on The Bachelor, and the fact that she's sitting there not doing anything, she didn't say anything, and they're acting like she's Lady Di, I couldn't even wrap my head around it. It felt like such a step backward for me.
Michael, the only thing we could come up with is that they despise Donald Trump so much that they are willing to look at anyone else and say, look at, she bested Mike Pence. Is that even reasonable to think that that might be their motivation? I mean, why would they do this?
I think it's something else. I think that they are so privileged that they have no idea what it's like to live in a country without freedom. If you're looking at Trump and you could say a lot of terrible things about Trump and are comparing him to Hitler, right? You don't know what tyranny is. You don't know what a dictatorship is. Mike Pence, what did Mike Pence, you know, compare to these, say the worst thing you can imagine about Mike Pence, to compare him to the dictators now and then is mind-boggling. So I think they just really look at her like Angela Merkel or Theresa May from the UK, that she's just a foreign leader, and they had completely dropped context that this woman has blood, including the blood of her own family, on her hands.
She had to be involved in the killing of her uncle and the killing of her brother, right?
Of course. I mean, that's how these murder families work, you know? So, and she's involved in the killing of many people now. You know, propaganda is, you have to smile and nod and repeat what I told. Let me give you an example of what North Korean propaganda sounds like. In kindergarten, they're taught Kim Jong-il was in his own kindergarten class, and the teacher said 1 + 1 = 2. And young Kim Jong-il said, no, that's wrong. And the teacher goes, what do you mean? And he goes, well, if I have one drop of water and I had another drop of water, I don't have two drops, I have one giant drop. And what this is a metaphor is, we should eliminate individuality in North Korea and have one country where everyone is the same. And they call it the monolithic ideological system. You saw that picture where they all had those same masks. Their point, and they brag about this, is we are a country where everyone thinks the same way, the way of the leader. That is their goal, to eliminate critical, independent thought. This is not something they're ashamed of. This is something they are proud of. Now, you and I can disagree about some things. Me and Stu can disagree about some things. You go live your life, I live mine. The idea that you or anyone would want us all to think identically is barbaric and horrifying.
We're going to be back with some more. I want to talk to Michael about what's happening in South Korea, because South Korea seems to be buying into this, even though the Japanese prime minister said, warning, don't buy into it. So many people are. Back in a minute.
MichaelMalice.com is the place you can go to get his work, as well on Twitter. He's a, I don't know how he'd probably admit to being an internet troll. Very enjoyable to follow on Twitter, I will say that, at Michael Malice.
Glenn Beck.
Michael Malice, the author of Dear Reader, the unauthorized biography of Kim Jong-il, expert on North Korea. Michael, the propaganda game seems to be working, at least from a distance. People are talking about, oh, how great it was that Mike Pence didn't stand for a united Korea. Well, I wouldn't have stood for that either, but everybody seems outraged by that.
Yeah, and here's the thing. You talk about the propaganda game, and this is the part I haven't seen people in the press discussing, which adds a whole other level of depravity. You know, she gets to take those headlines and send them back to North Korea to the population and be like, look, all the Western media is praising us, and she'll be telling the truth. I mean, they tell their population that the world's obsessed with them. They tell the population that everyone in all these countries are interested in studying their ideology, the Juche idea. But now she'll be telling the truth. Here's the Wall Street Journal, New York Times, CNN. Look, I stole the show. All eyes were on me. And it's the truth. These will be actual headlines. So it's really, really sick to me.
So does South Korea want reunification with the North?
South Korea does. I mean, obviously, it's just like the beautiful thing about a democracy as opposed to a monolithic ideological system like North Korea is that there's differences of opinion and we can discuss issues and come to, you know, a consensus or not. So there is it's all over the map in South Korea. Young people especially are not particularly interested in reunifying. The North is regarded as this like rural kind of like hillbilly embarrassment country. When refugees get to the South, they have to work very hard to lose their accents because they're treated extremely poorly. They're also very ignorant. They don't know what computers are, and they're often malnourished and short. And South Korea is very status-oriented. But again, you know, what's amazing about the propaganda offensive, they were threatening to send missiles to Guam over the summer, remember? And everyone's forgotten about that already. This is Mike Pence is supposed to shake hands with the woman whose country is like, we're going to send missiles to attack U.S. soil. And it's like, oh, that was last summer. It's bygones. Let's be pals now. What? I mean, it's mind-boggling. But the other thing is, in the 90s, they did this already. Kim Dae-jung, who was president of South Korea at the time, went to North Korea, shook hands with Kim Jong-il. It was called the Sunshine Policy. Mm-hmm. The idea was, let's give whatever they want, and maybe they'll be good people. He got the Nobel Peace Prize as a consequence. But all the consequence of it is North Korea maintained their hold on power, and they starved their own population. So this is not new. They go through these cycles. And I can't understand how reporters who are covering this fall for it, you know, time and time again. I mean, we've been there, done that many, many times with this despicable nation.
Michael, we have about 2 minutes. I was amazed by one of the things that they kept saying was, hey, we're looking forward to seeing our South Korean neighbors in Pyongyang, I think is the way they said it. They didn't say South Korea because they don't typically say that.
Correct.
But the media seemed to take that as, look at this gesture. They want to reunite and come together. That's not what they're saying, right? They're saying that eventually there will be no South Korea. And then at that point, you'll be North Korean citizens or just Korean citizens, and you'll be back. You'll be able to go back to Pyongyang. It was a threat.
It's mixed. So their whole argument is that Korea is the only country that has racially pure blood since the beginning of time. Korean was the first language. Korea was the first government. And Korea is indivisible. So when they talk about North and South, it's lowercase n, lowercase s, mm-hmm. because the South is not a separate country. It's a region under U.S. occupation, right? So they are always obsessed with reunification. The T-shirts they say Korea is one. But this is something that they use as propaganda because it's like, look, the only reason we're not reunified is because of those wicked U.S. imperialists who have the South Korean puppets under their control. So this is a mechanism to further divide their population against the U.S. But if they want to talk, I'd rather they be talking than building missiles. But at the same time, these are not people who play fair. These are not, you know, me and you are going to, you're going to try to sell me a house. You want to have as much money. I want to have less money. And it's some kind of bargain. These are shady people who will say what they need to do to get what they want.
How do you think this ends, Michael?
I hope this is I honestly think if this were the end of the North Korean regime, this is what the end would look like. Because there is so much information getting to North Korea, the fact that the UN's united against them, the fact that China has started even their own little way to turn their back on them, the fact that they have to leave Pyongyang and get on a plane to go to other countries. It's like in Hollywood, it's like who goes to whose table. So I'm...
Glenn. Beck,
sorry, we're out of...
Mercury.
Hate that, we're out of time.
Glenn Beck program.
The intel chiefs are testifying about national security threats to our country, and they are spending a lot of time today talking about Russia and what's happening with the election. One of our security chiefs said earlier they're going to do what they did last time and worse. We're not making any progress on this. We're not doing anything about this. That seems to be a problem, especially since war seems to be heating up a little bit with Russia in a story that no one is paying attention to.
Are you saying that just because we just killed over 100 Russian troops?
I heard as many
wounded maybe 300.
I heard as many as 600. Is that It's been confirmed.
It's not confirmed, I don't think, but there's, I mean, it was major. They attacked a U.S. Kurdish base, and we wiped them out with artillery and jet fighters. Russian troops. I mean, that's, now Russia claims that that was some rogue unit and that they didn't order the attack on the U.S. base.
And according
and we're
to
accepting that,
according to reports, we're accepting that as actually true.
Yeah.
Whether I mean,
I don't know that
we,
it is.
We don't want to start another, you know, a giant escalation with Russia either.
Right.
So we may just be kind of ignoring what we actually believe.
It's a little unnerving, though, to think that U.S. and Russian forces are
crossing swords.
Yeah. Are actually engaging one another and interacting like that. And that we killed so many Russians. That's usually not a good start to a wonderful relationship.
Usually, the last time we killed a bunch of Russians was never.
Yeah, never.
You try not to.
Never.
Just because it doesn't work out particularly well. It's not a fun thing. And that's
the
biggest issue is like what this could escalate into if something goes
awry,
right?
That's
the
thing.
We need to do some homework. We'll do it before the TV show. Maybe I can tuck this in. Do some homework on how the Russian media back home is portraying this. And if they're not portraying it, why? Why are they not reporting on it? If they are, how are they spinning it? Because Putin has spent a lot of time recently trying to make United States into the big bad wolf. And if we've just killed 100 of their soldiers, I can't imagine. Can you imagine if Russians killed 100 of our soldiers? What
would
be
an incredible outcry?
Oh my gosh!
Although
incredible,
I will say, if the reason they got killed is because a bunch of rogue troops went and attacked a bunch of people in their base, I think you know, if that we knew that was true, I would feel a lot less sympathetic to our side.
Yeah,
I mean, you don't just go.
If we believed that they were rogue troops, what would it take for us to believe that those were rogue troops?
A lot.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I would believe it.
Yeah, I don't think
I'm
I would
I'm not sure
either.
I believe these Russians were rogue troops.
Right.
Doesn't sound reasonable
It
to
does
me.
Seem, though, that the facts are agreed upon that the Americans were were just hanging out and they came and started attacking.
Yes.
So they were not
so I
the
do
aggressors.
Like the, I do like the point that we kicked their ass.
I do like that a lot.
I like that.
I do.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that makes you feel good that we can still do that, that we're willing to do that, because it seems like under the Obama administration,
what they say,
would have said, okay, well, maybe you can have half of the garrison and we'll keep the other half. Maybe you take 2/3 and we'll just.
Here's
Montana.
Why don't we get out of your way.
Montana. Yeah, that's generous.
Yeah. So what was the rogue troops excuse?
I haven't seen an excuse.
Because I haven't seen
It was called unprovoked. So they seemingly didn't have an excuse. Have you seen them say any reason for why they attacked the U.S. base? I haven't seen one.
No, I mean, just...
It'd be interesting to see, again, in their media.
Mm-hmm.
Because if we had rogue troops attack Russia, we would immediately disavow them, and we would find out what were they thinking? And we would be all over that. If they're not saying that these are rogue troops, if they're not saying that America killed a whole bunch, and if they're not saying, if they're reporting this story and they're not saying, well, we talked to them and this was their reasoning, I think that's trouble. Putin saves this kind of stuff. You know, he pulls this kind of stuff out and makes it an issue when it is his time.
You have this coming up this week on the TV show, talking a little bit more about Alexander Dugin, a guy from Russia, a really influential guy, and a guy who's collected many groups from around the world to try to change the way politics and ideology kind of works in the world. He's got a whole book about it and everything. But what is he doing with this information? Because certainly, I can't imagine those types of groups in Russia are presenting it that way. And if you look at the certainly on social media, you'll see people aligned with those groups are coming up with conspiracy theories as to why this happened, that it's not the way they're telling us, that, you know, of course, the Americans
flag?
Are the bad guys.
False
flag. Yeah. I mean, basically, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, what's really interesting to me is if you read the fourth political theory by Dugin, he's a terrifying guy. And he says that Hitler didn't go far enough. And it's his philosophy that is so frightening. He talks about the people of the sea and the people of the land. And the people of the sea are the North Atlantic Sea Treaty. Then the people of the land are Russia and the original motherland. I've been reading a book called Hitler's Monsters and another one at the same time called Ordinary Men.
And wait, you're reading a Nazi book?
I am.
Of some kind?
Shocking.
I am.
When does that? Wow.
Yeah.
Stunning development.
This, I'm telling you, Hitler's Monsters is absolutely fascinating. It is. It's really scholarly, so it's a little dry. But it is about how the seeds were planted for the dark arts and for, Luciferianism. Long before Hitler came into power. And it talks about all the things. It starts with Indiana Jones is not real. However, there is a real guy that's based on. Now, let's get away from the cartoons and let's look at what they were really trying to do. Anyway, there's this thing called the Thule Society that started in the teens and early 20s. Hitler was a big, his council were big, scholars in this Thule Society. That is Atlanteans. They believed that the people that were Germans in the Aryan race, they were Atlanteans. They survived. And they were this master race. And
from Atlantis?
Yeah. And that's pretty much what, the people of the sea, people of the land, pretty much what Dugin is saying. Mm-hmm. He's using all of these old pagan, crazy kind of myths and knitting them all together. And people will buy them when they're hungry or when they're afraid.
Mixed with some apocalyptic biblical things, too. Like,
yes, except in this book, and
like
it was
the Antichrist coming from the sea. I mean, that's
Dugin, right?
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
Dugin is, yeah,
and blaming NATO.
Yes,
That's becoming more and more popular.
Yes, and what's frightening is if you look at what happened with Hitler, and in this book, Hitler's Beasts, it was written by a guy from Cambridge, and it's very scholarly, and so it's not hyperbole at all. In fact, much of it is very dry. But if you look at it, he's making the case. Don't listen ever to anyone who says this was Christian. This is not a Christian movement. It is the exact opposite.
Nazis.
He has documented in Hitler's own writing, in books, all these books called like The Magician and stuff, Dark Arts. Hitler underlined certain things and wrote in the margins things like a real leader cannot truly be successful without demonic seeds inside of him. I mean, they really were going for evil stuff, and it's happening again.
It's pretty spooky.
It's happening again.
And they actually believed that they were the people of Atlantis.
They believed in Thor. They believed all of this. They
wow.
took all of these little pieces and put them together and then rolled it up into one, in one demonic blanket. It's fascinating.
We have the author of Hitler's Monsters coming on.
Next week, I think.
Is it next week or the week after?
Yeah,
it's coming up pretty soon, yeah. Because that book is...
Oh, that should be fascinating.
Yeah. I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Wow.
You could build an entire series out of this book, it seems like.
Oh, this book is... It's a little difficult to read. Because there's so much language in there that you don't know.
Three syllable words are in there.
Right. No. Exactly.
Oh, yeah.
There's only a few of three syllable, mostly two. So it's pretty hard.
But what have you ever heard that theory before? I've never heard of that.
He said, that's just one theory. That's just one part. Okay. That's not the overarching part. That's just one part. But he says at the very beginning, look, all of this stuff in Marvel Comics with the red mask of death, that guy, and all of this stuff is in our popular culture, but that's all lies built on a truly frightening platform that really happened, and we have to understand that. And as I'm reading it, I'm telling you, Well, what was the group that we looked at last week, Stu, on the Russian?
120 dB.
Yeah. We're looking at this World National Conservative meeting or whatever it is done by Dugin. You look at what they believe and you read that book and you're like, oh my gosh, it's coming back.
Is he still a big Trump supporter?
Dugin?
Do we know? Dugin? Yeah.
I don't know.
He's fallen off that bandwagon a little bit.
Yeah,
I'm not sure.
Leading up to the election, he was all about Donald Trump. I wonder if that's changed now.
You look at this World National Conservative Movement, which is basically a global National Socialist Party. It's the Nazis all over again. It's in 66. There's 66 groups, and it's in over 22 countries now. It's all financed, including America, and it's all financed by Russia and Alexander Dugin. And if you look at it, it's all the same philosophies. It's Dugin and Hitler combined. And then on top of it, when you go look at what they're saying, what did you just say? I was just trying to make a point based on what you just asked, Stu. Don't remember. Do you remember
the Trump part of?
Yeah. If he's still a supporter.
If you go into those groups and you start to look internally and what they're talking about on their own websites, Breitbart is everywhere.
Really?
It is everywhere. In every country, every Nazi front group, it's everywhere. It's amazing.
And chilling.
Totally chilling.
Wow.
Because it's going in two directions.
Glenn Beck.
So tonight you don't want to miss TV at 5 o'clock. We're going to go through this whole Susan Rice memo. There is something really wrong, and we're going to use just the facts from the New York Times. Of course, not yesterday's New York Times. We're going to tie a few stories together for the New York Times because they refuse to tie them together themselves. So we will we'll show you that tonight at 5 o'clock, what the rest of the media would like to pretend this isn't the article you're looking for.
And then at 5:30, the news and why it matters.
Yes.
Brand new show on the Blaze. Mm-hmm. Yep. So please check that out with Glenn, myself, Pat, Doc Thompson, Sarah Gonzalez.
So some millennials got into a boat.
They did. This is a very sad show today.
Sounds like a joke.
First of all, we heard about the Americans who joined ISIS are disappointed by the experience.
That was really sad.
That was a really sad segment.
Sad.
If you missed that, you need to go back and watch
this one. They did, you know, menial stuff. They weren't beheading people.
Some millennials decided they wanted to leave the world behind because how can we live our lives when we're working most of the day and you have to pay so much just to live?
Oh, my gosh.
So they paid $14,000 to purchase a boat that's 50 years old.
Mm-hmm.
They sold all their possessions, bought this boat, decided to embark on their journey. But there was one problem. Neither of them had bothered to learn how to sail.
Ah.
They also did not buy insurance.
Ah, okay. All right.
Perhaps no surprise that
they
capsized.
Well, once you buy a boat, the nice thing about boats, Stu,
yes.
Once you buy it, you don't ever have to put another dollar into
it. No, no maintenance costs.
There's
no
maintenance
effort at all.
Those are easy. Those are great.
Well, they capsized the boat on the first day. Stunningly, as they tried to go to Key West, they were pulled into a channel, ran aground on a sandbar. Neither were hurt. They did save their dog, and they tried to get the internet to pay for their new boat. They needed $10,000 to salvage their boat, and they still don't know how to sail. They still have not purchased insurance, but they have raised $13,181 because the rest of society is so stupid.
Oh my gosh. We'll see you tonight at 5.
Glenn Beck. Mercury.